Well, we might have a little ridicule for Jesus, but not that much. Easy to exaggerate. Jesus had great ridicule, a lot more than we have. Hebrews 12, 3 and 4 says this, "Consider him who endured much hostility by sinners against himself, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. You have not yet resisted to the point of shedding of blood in striving against sin." Oh, some bad words once in a while, not very often. In today's second section, the passers-by to Jesus on the cross will tell him very mean things. They will begin by getting Jesus crucified. In this section, three crosses, Golgotha, Latin Calvary, the place of the skull, which is probably a place where people died. It seems like historically the Church of the Holy Sepulchre is the right place, not so much a cave, which might look like a skull. The cave that might look like a skull was only thought to be the place of the cross in the 1880s. More likely, the place of the skull is just the place where people died and doesn't have to find a cave that looks like it, and is the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, and that goes back to AD 140, that this is the place. All three of them crucified together with the thieves, and that is where we will begin. Matthew 27, verse 38. "And at that time, two robbers were crucified with him, one on the right and one on the left." The Greek word for thief is kleptos. Came down as to kleptomania. That's like shoplifting. Although it is a correct translation, this word means a robber with violence. They either stole things by being violent or they threatened violence. These robbers will talk to Jesus later in verse 44. When he gets to verse 44, we will talk about what they said. Again, they were outside the city limits. The walls went around Calvary about AD 44. So the Bible account is correct, but it's only like 10 to 15 years. So the Bible is very accurate for a short time window. Outside the city gate, the passerbys were coming in to Jerusalem. They were not just international passerbys like Simon of Cyrene. Simon came all the way from North Africa in Libya. But other Jews were coming in. This is the time to be in the city. Herod was in the city for the Passover. Pilate was in the city for the Passover. All these people are entering the city, and they're being mean to Jesus, making a mockery of him. That is in the next section, which we will now read, verse 39 and following. "And those passing by were hurling abuse at him, wagging their heads and saying, 'You who are going to destroy the temple and rebuild it in 3 days, save yourself. If you are the Son of God, come down from the cross.' In the same way, the chief priests, along with the scribes and the elders, were mocking him, saying, 'He saved others. He cannot save himself. He is the King of Israel. Let him come down from the cross, and we will believe in him. He trusts in God. Let God rescue him if he delights in him, for he said, I am the Son of God.' The chief priests and others will quote Psalm 22 a little bit later in the section that we just read. But Psalm 22, verse 6 does predict that they will treat him like a worm, treat him with reproach, and actually, in Psalm 22, they will wag their heads at him. So the people coming in to the city fulfill prophecy, although they aren't the ones that quoted it. That will come later with the chief priest, but the incomers were wagging their heads. They said that he said he is the Son of God, not a Son of God, the Son of God. He never said he was going to destroy the temple. In John chapter 2, it's the closest. If you were to destroy this temple, not I am destroying a temple, if you were, if hypothetically you were to destroy this temple, and also in John chapter 2, the reference to the dwelling place of God is not to the worship temple in Jerusalem, it's to himself. God lived inside of him, like inside the temple, but if you were to kill me, I would rise again. So it's hypothetical, and it's not even talking about the temple. They seem to pick up these charges, and more than one groups pick up the same charges. We would say it this way, blowing up the temple. He never said such a thing. So the mixed up crowds coming in to the city of Jerusalem were repeating what they had already had heard. You are the Son of God. Now we get to the chief priests. Those were the higher ups that put Jesus on trial. The scribes. Now they write a bunch of things. You could say lawyers. Actually, grammarians is one of the words used of them, because they were like lawyers, but they were writing, shall we say, Bible studies for the courts. So chief priests, lawyers, elders would be a group of the 70, the Sanhedrin. Most interesting, in verse 42, he saved others. He's not going to save himself, but he saved others. That's quite a statement. Jesus saved others from death. Jesus did miracles. The people got better and they did not die. Jesus raised a few people from the dead. They admitted that he could do supernatural things. They want to kill him. They said the same thing in John 11:48. Caiaphas had said, "What good is it that this man is doing many miracles? Perhaps all men will come and believe in him." So several places he did miracles. We want him dead, but he saved others from death. Verse 42. Jesus had said that he would give up his own life. He could have come down from the cross. They would have believed him, but he would not yet have paid for our sins. So he was going to give up his life. He said he theoretically could call 12 legions of angels. That's not far away from our text. That's Matthew 26, verse 53. John chapter 10, he gave his own life for the sheep. It was voluntary. He could have protected himself. He could have gotten away with it. They want him to come down from the cross, but he's not going to. Psalm 22 talked about wagging their heads. That was not quoted in the first part that we read. But later on, it's quoted that they divided up his garments. That's also in Psalm 22. You come down from the cross, said the people coming into town. The scribe said, let God the Father take him from the cross. So it seems like they were coming in. I think they were close enough that Jesus could hear what they're saying, because the references about the robbers was that they heard what they were saying. So it must have been that Jesus could hear what they're saying, because the robbers could hear what they're saying. And in the Gospel of Luke, did you not hear Jesus asking for help? So let's read the next verse, verse 44, where the robbers are talking. The robbers who had been crucified with him were also insulting him with the same words. So they must have been close enough to hear what they were talking about. They're coming into the city, and they must have been close enough to the crosses that the robbers could hear with the same words. The first time on the cross, the first few hours, it was a daylight, but in the last few hours, it's going to become darkness. It's going to be dark. And then probably that's when one of the robbers does change his mind. Because here they are attacking him, but in the Gospel of Luke 23:43, they ask for help, and he says, "Truly, I say to you, today you shall be with me in paradise." So both of them started criticizing Jesus, but later one changes. Again, maybe after things get dark, and they start to think about things. Paradise is a Persian word. There aren't very many Persian words that made it over into the Old Testament, into Hebrew, but paradise was a walled garden with flowers and plants and fruits, and so it made it over into Hebrew. Today you will be with me in the spiritual equivalent of a garden, the spiritual equivalent of lots of fruit trees. Both robbers insulted Jesus. One changed. If we have any insults today, again, they're not that bad. It says in the book of Acts that the apostles had much insults. We're not as bad as the apostles. And it says in Acts 5:41, they went on their way from the council, rejoicing that they were worthy to be condemned, considered to suffer shame for his name. So we didn't have as much as Jesus. We didn't have as much as the apostles, but they were all kind of glad. They were all kind of glad that they were insulted for Jesus, and we can be glad the few times that it happens. Don't worry about making everybody happy all the time. Paul in Galatians 1:10, "Am I seeking the favor of men? If I were still trying to please men, I would not be the servant of Christ." So, if it doesn't matter any, can decide to do something that makes other people happy, but if it would reject Jesus, if it would reject the truth, do what is right. If they don't like it, too bad. Galatians 5:1, keep standing firm. So keep standing firm, and if other people make fun, like they're making fun of here, if they make fun, who cares? Don't give in to it. Don't let them stop us from believing what is right and doing what is right. Jesus was on the cross for 3 hours, but the sky got darker at noon. And let's read the next verse where it gets darker. Verse 45. "Now from the sixth hour, darkness fell upon all the land until the ninth hour." They arrested Jesus in the middle of the night. The previous day, they had a court in a house, the house of the high priest. It should have been in the temple. It should not be in the middle of the night. They reaffirmed the death penalty as soon as they could in the morning. They brought him over to Pilate. It says in the Gospel of Mark 15:25, it was the third hour when they crucified him. It would be 9 o'clock in the morning when it started. 9 till noon was still light. But all three Gospels said it got dark for 3 hours. Now, this is among the events that everybody in the city would know whether it happened or not. How do you write in a book that it got dark for 3 hours in the middle of the day if it did not happen? If it did not happen, this part of the account would not be believed. And the rest of it would not be believed. It had to have gotten dark in the middle of the day. Darkness is mentioned outside of the Bible. As early as AD 52, a Christian writer named Thallus talks about it got dark. Then there is a anti-Christian critic attacking the dark. His name was Phlegnon. That's like his dates are AD 80 to 140. And he agreed that it got dark in the middle of the day. Everybody knew it got dark in the middle of the day. But he says the Christians were just dumb. That was a solar eclipse. And the Christians answered, at Passover week, it is a full moon. It would not have been a solar eclipse. So the pagan said darkness happened, but it could not have been a solar eclipse. It was a supernatural darkness. Everybody must have seen it. God made the world dark. Now, theologically, why did it get dark? Well, maybe God was grieving. God the Father was sad about this death. Darkness could mean the curse of sin. The curse of sin had been placed upon Jesus. It could also stress the separation from God the Father. The Son was separated from God the Father for these times. God sort of turned his back on him. God turned, shall we say, his shining face away from the whole world and away from Jesus the Son. They might be all true. Curse of sin, God the Father's grief. But if we had to stress, it's a separation from God the Father, and separation is the actual definition of death. And the next verse talks about separation. So let's read about Jesus talking about separation, which is darkness, verse 46 and following. About the ninth hour, Jesus cried out with a loud voice, saying, Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani, translating it, my God, why have you forsaken me? And some of those who were standing there when they heard this began saying, this man called for Elijah. Immediately, one of them ran, taking a sponge, he filled it with sour wine, and put it on a reed and gave him a drink. But the rest of them said, let us see whether Elijah will come to save him. And Jesus cried out again with a loud voice and yielded up his spirit. The ninth hour, the way they do it, would be about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. The Last Supper for the Galileans was the previous night. And Jesus and the apostles had a Last Supper. But the Judeans killed their Passover lamb at 3 o'clock. So they're killing all these lambs exactly at the time Jesus died. Jesus quotes Psalm 22. He quotes it in verse 46. It is interesting here that the words here are Aramaic, not so much Hebrew. Hebrew means a crosser over, and Abraham crossed over the rivers to go to Israel, so that's where Abraham the Hebrew came from. And most people could read Hebrew. They could talk it, but they picked up Aramaic while they were in the exile. So after the exile, they picked up Aramaic, and they could read Hebrew, but Jesus talked in Aramaic here, and he was separated from God the Father for 3 hours on the cross. Somehow, the payment for sin for eternity times billions of people was paid for in 3 short hours on the cross. They were listening to the people coming in, and they were listening to Jesus. Some thought when he said, my God, Eli. He's calling for Elijah. Elijah is one of the few people in Old Testament times that went up to heaven. Often, nearly always, Old Testament saints went down, and there was two compartments of down. Down is Hades in Greek, Sheol in Hebrew. They went down. Even believers went down, like the rich men and Lazarus, down to Abraham's bosom. Just a few went up. Elijah went up. Probably Enoch went up. Maybe Moses. Anyway, in the Transfiguration, you have Moses and Elijah, and Moses coming down from him. Maybe three that we know of. Most of them went down. But the listeners there, he's calling for Elijah. Let Elijah rescue him. Well, they were all mixed up because he was talking to Eli, my God, my God. And there was a short time of separation. With a loud voice, megaphone, not quite a megaphone, but got a lot, megaphone with a loud voice. Matthew does say that he died, but it doesn't give the last few actual phrases. The last two, you can flip them around and say which was which and which was the final. The seven sayings of the cross are very common for churches to do on Good Friday. Sometimes there are seven churches together, and each pastor does just a few minutes on each one. Hard to know which is which. Father, into your hands I commend my spirit. Or, it is finished. Very often it is taken in the order I just gave. Father, into your hands I commend my spirit. And then, it is finished. But Jesus determined the exact time in which he would die. He decided now is the time to die. He died of a broken heart. He gave up his life. Typically, crucifixion victims would die from not being able to breathe. They would keep pushing up on those painful nails in their feet. To get them to die quicker, they would break their legs. Then they could not push up anymore. Then they could not breathe. In the bone box that was found by the archaeologist of a crucified person, they found nails in the heels. They also found a broken leg. It didn't take Jesus that long to die. He died before they broke the legs of the other two. Pilate asked for the legs to be broken. They did not break his legs. He fits the type of the Passover lamb that could not have broken bones. It's really kind of odd that the soldiers who didn't know the Old Testament were the ones fulfilling the Old Testament and making Jesus fit the Passover lamb. Not a bone broken. John 9:36, fitting the Passover lamb. Jesus died of a broken heart. It says that the blood and water poured out. And we're back to our article from the Journal of the American Medical Association, which we have back in the files. And like to read it when we're doing the Gospel of John, but we have a separation of blood and water, which clearly says he died. This is not a possibility of a swoon theory. The swoon theory would be that Jesus just passed out on the cross, then he came out of the tomb because he never had died, but the blood and the water separated show a definite death. He gave up. It is finished. Paid in full. used on the receipts. Archaeologists have found little receipts where it says the same thing, tetelestai, which paid to the full on receipts. It is finished. And that's what Jesus said. In addition to knowing that it got dark and knowing there was an earthquake, all would know about the veil in the temple. That's the next verse, verse 51. And behold, the veil of the temple was torn in two from the top to the bottom, and the earth shook, and the rocks were split. The veil in the temple was between the holy place in the Holy of Holies. All priests would know that it was opened up. It would have been supernatural to open up. The veil was a lot bigger than any drapes we know about. 60 feet wide, 30 feet high, but again, a hand breadth. That's a very thick cloth, a hand breadth. That's, should I do it again? End of the thumb, the finger. That's a pretty thick cloth. It'd be a supernatural opening. And all of the priests would know about it. Only the high priest would go into the Holy of Holies, but ordinary priests would go into the holy place every day. They would trim the lamps on the menorah and add oil to it and light up the menorah. And then once a week, they would take a little table with 12 loaves of bread in and out of it. All the priests would know that this was true. Often the strange events would be known by everybody in the city, including the opening of the veil. In Acts 6:7, a great many of the priests were obedient to the faith. They're going to become believers. They didn't start out that way, but they're going to look at the supernatural events. They will hear from the apostles and get the messages. Regarding an opening of the veil, it's saying there is no more temple worship. It's going to become a church. And let us come boldly to the throne of grace, Hebrews 4:16, written to the priests, most likely. It's been opened up. All believers can come into the presence of God. Don't have to be a special priesthood. All can come in. Now I'd like to do two more verses before we go today. Verses 52 and 53. And the tombs were open, and many bodies of the saints who have fallen asleep were raised. And coming out of the tombs after his resurrection, they entered the holy city and appeared to many. Jesus went down, it says in other places like Ephesians 4 and 1 Peter 3. Jesus went down after his death. It seems like he went down to where the saved people were. And he went down after his death. It says in Ephesians 4 that he who ascended first descended into the lower parts of the earth. He went down and took the Old Testament saints back up. Now, they probably won't go all the way to heaven till his ascension, but he went down, brought some of them up. Here they were, appeared to many. This is only in Matthew. Torn veil is in the other Gospels, but to say that there were some Old Testament saints who were raised, that's only in Matthew. The darkness was seen all over the world. It could not be an eclipse at the time of the Passover. It was a supernatural darkness, and we have people outside the Bible that agree that it was dark. Jesus gave up his own life. It is finished. Into your hands I commend my spirit. He gave it up willingly to pay for our sins. We will wait till next time for verse 54. And it kind of seemed like one of the soldiers, it might have become a Christian. If not, they at least believe that the cross involved a miracle. That'll be verse 54. And we'll do that later. We do have a lot of music for next week. If anybody wants to do a testimony, let me know, or go sign those sheets still on the back. It'd be good to have some people talk. Otherwise, we'll offer it. We'll have all kinds of musicians. Will the musicians please come for now?